It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
California Wine Country brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. Dan Berger back with us. Today we're going to do a tribute to Mary Ann Graff, an iconic winemaker who passed away recently. Barbara Lindblom is here. She's the retired winemaker at CME.
Well, I was at CME.
Oh, you're not retired?
I am retired.
Oh, okay.
But I left CME some years ago. So
oh, okay.
I grew up.
But this is where Mary Ann got her start. She was
at
her
CME.
First at CME. She
yeah.
was there in 73 after they'd hired Andrei Chelichev in 73 to become the associate winemaker. And then she took over as head winemaker in 73 with Andrei. And so the wine we have tonight, besides all the other stuff we're going to drink, is going to be the CME.
See me, feel me, touch me.
See me, North Coast Burgundy, and it's a non-vintage wine, comes out of our cellar, and it's from 1973, and I know that because the bottle of the bottle has a code in the bottom of the bottle that says 1974, the year that the bottle was manufactured. So therefore, this was the 73 wine.
Vintage, yeah.
Right. And so this
wow. And we have no idea what this is going to taste like.
It could be done. It could be finished. We don't know.
And it's Burgundy. It's Carignan. And
Carignan, Zinfandel, and maybe one or two other percent of something else. But this was Mary Ann's greatest calling. She had a very, very fine tuned palate. And she was very sensitive to good quality acidity. I drank at least two cases of this wine. I bought it all at Trader Joe's for $1.99.
Nice work.
Including a 10% plus a 10% discount. So it was $1.79 out the door. This is what passed for California dry wine in those days. Sebastiani made one. Heights made one. Most of the major wineries were making a Burgundy. Mm-hmm. And those Burgundies in those days were blends. Mary Ann was very talented because she was, first of all, you can talk a little bit about her history, but she got a degree at Davis,
mm-hmm.
and was one of the pioneer women in that movement.
She was the pioneer.
She was the first of the women candidates to graduate with a degree in enology from Davis.
And she was in Sonoma County?
Yeah, exclusively.
And when did she pass?
It was about 2 weeks ago, was it? I think she died.
The 30th of January.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So I heard that.
A couple of months ago.
I remember reading about it in the PD, and I've certainly heard her name before. How old was she when she passed?
She was 70, what, 5, I think? 76? 76.
Okay.
She was vibrant, though, and I'll tell you, I saw her a couple of years before her death, and I had no clue she was ill, and she looked vibrant, and she worked right up to the end. She was really a very sweet lady, a great sense of humor, and pretty tough on winemakers when she was consulting with them back. Probably, I would guess, her last consulting job would have been around, what, 79 or 80 or 81, something like that, because she started Vinquiry, her lab analysis organization up in Healdsburg, just about that time. I don't know how long it was, but she had Vinquiry. She and her partner, Marty Bannister, opened Vinquiry, and it's one of the most professional of all wine analysis laboratories that existed in California at that time. Since then, we've had a few others added to the picture, but she really did a lot of work to stabilize wine in California, especially with northern Sonoma County fruit, because she was up in Healdsburg, and a lot of her clients were up that way. And so she had a lot of clients who were making wines from Alexander Valley. And one of her specialties was Chardonnay. And she really worked on trying to get people to understand that you can't play around too much with Chardonnay growing in Alexander Valley because it's going to be right on the edge in terms of acidity. It's not going to have a lot of acidity. It's a warmer climate. And so she was really concerned to making sure that these winemakers understood.
Barbara Lindblom, am I saying that right?
That's correct.
Give us your background, how you came to be in the winemaking business.
Well, I decided I had been doing one kind of work, and I was tired of it, and so was thinking of what I would do next, and a friend of mine said, well, you come and work harvest here at Mondavi, and then you go away. And I said, great, I'm going to get laid off. That's terrific. But it was 3 years later that I finally did go. And went, because at that point, when I first started working there, Zelma was basically not the winemaker, but she basically was, in essence, the winemaker. And she, so when she got the job at Simi Winery, she asked me if I would like to come and work with her. And I said, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. So that was really a treat. So I worked with her basically for 10 years between the two wineries. And
she and Andrei Chelichev were quite a team, because Andrei was less inclined toward technical stuff and more inclined toward understanding wine from its sensory evaluation point of view. And the two of them were absolutely fabulous team.
Andre's name comes up almost every time on this show.
Yeah.
That's true.
Give us, I always ask you to do this, give us either one or both the background on this iconic dude.
Barbara, you should just start it out and then I'll finish. Because there's not much. You could talk about him for 2 hours without
Andrei Chelichev.
Chelichev, yeah.
Chelichev.
He came over in 1936. From France, where he had been a student, but he was born in Georgia, in the Soviet Union.
Wow!
So,
he was just a wonderful person. I mean, had a great sense of humor. He was always interested in what he was doing. He was interested in what everybody else was doing, and he just inspired people. And
his knowledge of wine was so instinctive that it was very difficult for him to impart some of that knowledge. And it's a good thing that Marianne was in touch with him early on, because she then communicated a lot of what Andrei had for this industry in a way that made sense to the winemakers. And she was sort of the translator of this man who spoke with such a thick Russian accent.
So Marianne Graf, who passed away in January, an iconic winemaker here, and how long did she work? What was her situation?
Well,
with
she worked
Andrei
at Simi for several years. I don't know how many. I think it was until
I'm trying to remember what year I started.
Close. You just get close.
Yeah, just close.
Ballpark.
So let's see, 79, 78 to 79. Yeah, about 80.
When did Andrei
77,
pass away?
Sorry.
I think he lived until it was 92 when he passed away.
Wow.
I think it was in, let's see, he was born in 02, I believe. So it was 94, I think it is when he passed away.
And how long was he in Sonoma County?
Well, he left Beaulieu Vineyard in the Napa Valley right around 1970, 69, 70, 71, in that range. He finally, he took a few months off, and then began to consult. And he began to consult for people. Some of them wanted to pay him. He said, okay, I'll take a paycheck. But it was not a big deal. And before you could turn around, Andrei was consulting with literally 30 or 40 wineries, and half of them paid him and half didn't. It didn't
wow.
make any difference to him.
Wow.
He was just so dedicated.
Yeah, he was a wonderful person.
He made a trip sometime after. I was about 79, I think it was. He made a trip to Washington State. And his nephew, Alex Golitson, was making Cabernet up there. And to this day, Alex Golitson's Cabernet is the best Cabernet being made in the state of Washington. And that was his nephew. And he consulted with his nephew, even though the nephew was using completely atypical methods. And the wine is fabulous today. I mean, this is a story that really needs to be told. Marianne's involvement with Andrei was tremendous in one respect, that she didn't have an accent, and Andre's accent was really thick. And period of time when he was sort of not in the public eye at all, he wasn't a winemaker for any particular winery, he was making unbelievable judgments that benefited the industry in so many different ways. It's hard to even put it down on paper. It doesn't make sense to most people.
Barbara, talk a little more about Marianne Graf.
Well, Marianne, as a person,
you're making a lot of noise today.
Your Chardonnay for you.
Thank you.
He just has so many things, glasses to pour. So Marianne was, as an individual, really remarkable. She was so generous with her time and with her thoughts, and at the same time, she wasn't gooey. You know, she was very clear. She's very professional, but as a friend, she was also, you could just always count on her. There was just no question. And then in terms of her consulting and the laboratories and whatnot, they were just so clear. She and her partner were just so calm about everything, which I thought was pretty amazing. I mean, they started out pretty small, and they just grew and grew and grew because they were extremely intelligent, really knowledgeable about wine, and very good at explaining things to people.
And if she had had the time, I talked to Marianne about this a long time ago. We were both judges at a competition in the Midwest, not exactly the heartland of fine wine. And there were some really disastrous wines there. They were just really spoiled. And she never said a negative thing about the wines.
I bet you did.
I kept my tongue because I'm sitting next to Marianne. I wasn't about to. So I was ready to say something, but I finally said, hey, this is your game too. So the two of us would quietly talk, and then finally she'd say, okay, now, we know that this wine has a problem. Well, let's just be quiet about it, and let's see if we can get past this. And she was so calm. And then finally, somebody would say, there's one guy who's an Illinois winemaker. So I'll never forget. He comes up to her and says, so did you like my wine? And she said, we can talk about this. You've got some potential.
That's brilliant.
That's not what he wants to hear.
He didn't want to hear that.
No.
Oh, but there were so many worse things he could have heard.
Oh, yeah. Illinois is not the heartland of great wine.
No. Barbara, besides Marianne Graff's work with Andrei Chelichev, mm-hmm. What made her such a spectacular winemaker? I'm asking her. Will you just calm down, please?
I'm just drinking my Chardonnay. You want some Chardonnay, sir?
Well, we got to talk about this first.
All right.
But go ahead.
Okay.
Barbara.
Well, I think one of the things is that she was just very focused. So if she was working on a wine, she was focused on that wine, and she was not getting a lot of the things we might say to ourselves, well, I wonder if it could have been like this, or I wonder if it could have been like that. She would just look at what's there, what can make it better, and also being very clear on what were the, because she was consulting for people, one of the things is, you have to be clear about what people are looking for in order to consult them
clearly. Yeah.
So you could say to a winemaker, well, what's your target? Give me the descriptors of what you want from this wine. And what are your limitations in terms of fruit, or what are your limitations in terms of oak, whatever like that. And she would ask those questions, and then they could take it from there. And it was just...
The most impressive thing about what Marianne brought to the table was that she was not one to do a quick fix. She hated that. She would not, in fact, she would tell winemakers who were, they'd already hired her, she's their consultant, and they say, how can we do this? Da, 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 da. And she would say, with this wine, that's inappropriate. Even though the wine's not yet bottled, and there are things you could do, she said, that would be a quick fix. You don't want to do that, because long term, you're going to have to face the music on this stuff. So she was always looking out for your future. It was not necessarily what could be done today and tomorrow or next week. It was what would happen to you in 5 years if you choose to make a quick fix.
It wasn't an ego-driven situation.
Not at all. And she was not involved in trying to sell anything. She was trying to help winemakers make sound, balanced wine. And that word balance is critical.
This we're tasting this 2000 Old Vine Zinfandel from Fanucci Vineyards.
Yep.
And I heard you say to Barbara, it still tastes like a Zinfandel. It's a 2000.
You go 19 years and Zinfandel usually changes. Yeah. And this is a pretty tasty wine, but it goes back to what Marianne was teaching. If you've got plenty good acidity, mm-hmm. if you've got the acid to carry the wine, It's going to be there in a few years. And you try this Chardonnay, and I think this is what I like to
think. Oh, I love Stone Street.
Well, and Stone Street makes really fine quality Chardonnay. But here you have, this is a wine that Marianne would have been thrilled to be a part of, because the fruit is obviously really, really good fruit. But you'll notice that it says on here, it just says Estate Vineyards. But if you look on the back label, it says Alexander Valley. This is where Marianne did her best work. Alexander Valley isn't the prime region in the United States for making Chardonnay.
Chardonnay, yeah.
Russian River maybe, Sonoma Coast maybe, Bennett Valley, whatever. She took pride in the fact that her Chardonnays from Alexander Valley would still have the structure. This wine's got the structure. This
it's
is a
gorgeous
2016 Stone Street Estate. It's Alexander Valley, and it's some selected vineyard blocks. It sells for a suggested retail of $45. It could be a lot more if it wanted to. But Stone Street has been making exemplary Chardonnays for a long time using warmer climate fruit, but capturing that fruit in a way that allows you to enjoy the wine for the next 5 years. It's not, this wine's not going to fall apart anytime soon. That's a delicious wine.
When we come back after the break, we're going to open this 1973 Burgundy from Simi?
Simi Burgundy.
Okay, and this was the one that was worked on with Andrei Chelyachev and
Yeah, this was
Marianne.
One of the first two wines, one of the first one of the first wines that Andrei made with Marianne Graf when she joined Simi. Her first year was 73 at Simi, and Andrei had been hired the year earlier to be the consulting winemaker for this project. So this wine essentially came off of all their old estate vineyards that were essentially Carignan in those days. Carignan is a kind of a workhorse variety. It's not doesn't have a lot of distinctiveness. We'll open this and during the break, and we'll see if there's any quality to it. If there's none, we're going to have to move on.
I can't wait to have a taste of this. 1973
Burgundy, and the reason is that I know that it's 73 because the bottle code is 74. Other than that,
what a researcher.
Hey, and the cork, for at least from the top of the cork, that's looks great. Okay. So for the moment,
all right.
Sorry, I keep bouncing around.
Yeah, you're so noisy today.
Yeah, I just.
Barbara Lindblom is here. She was the winemaker, a former winemaker at Simi as well. When did you retire from winemaking?
Well, actually, I was the laboratory director at Simi.
Oh, okay.
And then I became the winemaker at a couple other places. And actually, I spent a couple of years in France, and that was really helpful.
Yeah.
You could talk a little bit about your other wine experiences. You had some other experiences with famous Sonoma County properties.
Which ones are you thinking of?
Well, you can name them yourself.
Actually, so I was making the wine at Grand Cru, when Grand Cru was still functional.
Wow.
With Bob Magnani.
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
All right, I almost forgot.
He was pretty much retired by then. And the family was that owned it then. They're very nice people, and there were some really lovely grapes. So that was interesting. So that was my first. And then...
did you work with Miramar Torres?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yes. Yes. I did. And she was very interesting. Wonderful vineyard.
Great vineyard.
Great
out
vineyard.
In Green Valley.
Yeah, makes wonderful wines. And I had to go to Spain for a couple of times just to...
Oh,
I know.
Poor baby.
This is a tough business. I'm telling you. And, and then you go somewhere, and then you got to taste more wines.
Yeah. We're doing a tribute to Marianne Graf, who passed away here in January. Barbara Lindblom is with us, and, of course, Dan Berger. He has opened this 1973 vintage. What is with that cork? Is that what you expected?
It's in pretty good shape, actually.
Really?
It's
looks disgusting.
White at the top. Well, the bottom is ready to deteriorate, but if it hadn't been for the Durand cork system, I wouldn't have gotten it out clean, but it came out.
I think I'm going to have to get one of those.
Our guest today is Barbara Lindblom, a retired winemaker. She formerly worked for Simeon and other places. We're doing kind of a tribute to Mary Ann Graff, who passed away earlier this year, a local iconic winemaker, Dan Berger here, and as I call him, Dan Lay It Down Berger. He brought in a Simi North Coast Burgundy from 2003.
No.
1973. I'm sorry. Okay. It's only 12% alcohol.
Right.
And again, it's, what is it, Carignan and?
Oh, probably a small percent, like 10% is Zinfandel. And those were the days when everybody that had a winery had some varietal wines, and then they had a generic. And the generic was always their sort of last-minute decision-making. Let's make an inexpensive bottle of wine. These wines were all $1.99. Trader Joe's carried them all. Burgess had one. Tom Burgess over in the Napa Valley had one that was mainly Cabernet Sauvignon, which was a surprise. But he also made a small amount of Petit Sirah that was fabulous. Mm-hmm. Then he had then there was Sebastiani's Burgundy was largely Zinfandel with a little bit of Barbera added. Joe Heitz had a Heitz Cellars had a Burgundy that was essentially leftover wine from Hanzel Vineyards in Sonoma County. He would buy the wine because he got the barrel for free. That's a long story. And they would ship the wine over in barrels. And that wine was essentially Pinot Noir with other leftovers of Merlot and things like that. These were wines that were staples in the portfolio of these wineries. And most importantly, they were inexpensive. They were always sold at Trader Joe's for $1.99. Jeez. And you always got 10% on a case purchase.
That's cheaper than $2 Chuck, for God's sakes.
Well,
this is good stuff.
A few years ago. So, and I was a taster for Joe back in 71.
Wow.
So I was a budding winemaker type that never made wine. But I tasted wine with Joe Colombe at Trader Joe's for many, many years. And during that period, we got to try all these different Burgundies. The Simi Burgundy was always the most reliable because it was always made essentially from the same blend for a long, long time through the late 70s. Mm. This wine was always Carignan-based.
On the back of the label, it says Sonoma County was selected by Giuseppe and Pietro Simi in 1876 as the best place to start their winery.
And that's 5 years before Italian Swiss Colony was founded. That you need to know that.
Wow. Okay, so Dan opened this 1973 Burgundy from Simi. I was saying all day, I don't think it's going to be very good, but what do I know? I mean, it's so old, but
it had that sort of redwood character. This was not aged.
It's good.
Yeah, it was not aged in barrels. It was aged in upright tanks, wooden tanks. These tanks almost always had a trace of mold, and the mold became a part of the way the wine was made. Louis Martini used to make a Burgundy that was called Mountain Burgundy. And I once asked Mike Martini, who's living out on the coast these days, and I said, Mike, how much mountain fruit was in that? And he says, none. We just called it Mountain Burgundy. You know?
All right. Now tell me your thoughts on this. And then I want you to tell everyone how this is going to turn brown in the glass, from red to brown.
The story, my favorite story.
But right. First, talk about...
All right. Well, first of all, Carignan is pretty much of a workhorse variety. It was never intended to be aged. But what do I know? I just kept buying this stuff and drinking it. Then at one point, I ran out of any ideas about where the wines were, so they got lost in the cellar, and then I moved and moved. And finally, some about 12 years ago, I discovered a bunch of this stuff sticking in the back of the cellar. I started opening up these old bottles, and they were fine. So there's a little bit of oxidation creeping in, but not much. Yeah. The wine's pretty sound. It's got some real nice fruit, but it's dried fruit rather than fresh fruit, which, as you would expect, because the wine's 40-some years old. But the interesting thing about this is that it really still tastes a little, for those people who are old enough to remember what Carignan used to taste mm-hmm. like, this is like Carignan. This is pretty much what that is. In the olden days, when Sebastiani was making theirs, they used a lot more Zinfandel, so their wine has a little bit more fruit. But the old Sebastiani Burgundies didn't age as well because Zinfandel doesn't age as well as Carignan. You don't expect much from Carignan, but what you get is long-lived. So in this particular case, I know this smell. I know this smell really well. This is a, what I'd call a precursor of oxidation. So I'll tell a story. It's very interesting. So in approximately the year 2000, I'm guessing, my wife, Julianne, and I went to Spain, and Julianne had discovered a restaurant online in 2000 that was called Sporting, S-P-O-R-T-I-N-G. It's in Madrid. It's in a suburb of Madrid. And a very, very long and complicated story. We finally got to this restaurant, and we opened it. So it's 11 o'clock at night, and they're still beginning the dinner service at that hour because they eat late. And so they said to us, would you like to order a bottle of wine? I said, looked at the little wine list, and I said, here it is, a bottle of 1971 Baron Delay Rioja.
You know, now, what is Rioja?
Baron Delay is the name of the producer. Rioja, yeah. R-I-O-J-A, Rioja.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right.
And
I've seen that. I just don't know how to pronounce it correctly.
Okay. And with the conversion rate at that time, there's no euros in those days. So we ended up with a bottle of Rioja that cost us $11. And I asked the owner of the restaurant, wait a minute, this is $11? He says, yes. He says, you have to appreciate the fact that the Spanish do not like old wine.
Really?
They just don't drink old wine. They drink them young. And the reason that they age them so long in barrel is that the aging in the barrel replaces aging in the bottle. So we opened up this bottle of 1971 Baron Delay Rioja. The smell was glorious. The taste was phenomenal. And within the next 20 minutes, the wine turned from red to brown to undrinkable.
Really?
20 minutes in the glass. We watched it as it went. And notice, in the last 5 minutes, I kept saying to my wife, you better drink it up because in 5 minutes it's going to be dead. And it was.
All right. So that's what you were saying off air about this 73 Burgundy.
But I think this is in better shape than the Baron Delay Rioja. Because,
but you said this is going to turn from red to brown
soon.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever's in your glass here, by 6 o'clock, it's going to be done. You don't want to take this home, Steve. You wouldn't even want to cook with it.
No, thank you. What causes that? I'm sorry.
The browning?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, usually one of the things that stops browning in wine is SO2. And so what happens when, over time, the free SO2 just
SO2.
Diminishes.
Sulfur dioxide. Okay, yeah.
And it dissipates.
It dissipates. It's gone. It settles in. And so that leaves the wine vulnerable. Also, I would say that the phenolic material also becomes less potent, if you will. It starts kind of combining and falling out of solution.
Breaking down?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And what happens is you get sediment.
Yeah, I saw sediment in my glass.
There's plenty of it at the bottom of this bottle.
I can't wait to watch it turn brown. Eh?
It's good. Well, just leave it in your glass. Don't drink it.
Would you like red or white tonight? We prefer brown, please.
I've had plenty of brown. Well, let me tell you, I've had plenty. In my earlier years when I didn't have any money and I was buying Italian wine for $1.99, it was always brown.
Yeah. The color aside, this wine tastes really nice.
1973, folks.
Yeah. Well, I think it tastes fruity.
Yeah, and I think Marianne.
Yeah, it still does.
I think Marianne. We, by the way, just as a point of reference, we still have a couple of bottles of the 72 of this same property. That wine was not made by Marianne. Mm-hmm. It was made by the prior winemaking team. That wine is essentially dead. Yeah. And the 73 is still alive. Now, next time I come into the studio, I'll bring you a 72 and a 73. We'll pour them side by side. You'll see how important the winemaker is.
I was going to ask you years ago, since you're the Dan Lay It Down Burger Cellar Master, if you could bring in older wines every week. And now you're saying you're going to. So
let's
that's,
do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because every week we'll have an old wine.
And it could be good, it could be bad.
We have very rarely had a bad bottle from our cellar because our cellar is...
Even from the 70s.
From the 50s.
Holy crap.
Because...
Bring in a 50.
Our temperature in the cellar is 55 to 60 degrees year round. Mm-hmm. We've got a concrete pad in there. We've got a sheer wall. And it's natural. There's no air conditioning in there.
That's great.
Underground, that helps.
So one thing about this wine, too, is I get fruit. I get characters of fruit.
And
they might be cooked fruit, but it's fruit.
Like you said, dried fruit.
Or dried fruit. But I'll tell you one thing. When you taste a wine this old and you taste a wine of this balance, you say to yourself, if you've been in the business as long as I have, you say to yourself, somebody who knew wine made this wine. Mm. Somebody who had an instinct. That's Marianne.
Yeah.
She understood this, and so did Andrei Chelyachev.
Barbara Lindblom is with us. We're doing a tribute to Marianne Graf, who passed away earlier this year. Iconic local winemaker. It is California Wine Country with Dan Berger, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. If your winery or brewery is in the equipment planning mode for this year, you should check with Della Tofola. For more than 60 years, they've been making equipment for the wine, beer, and beverage industries worldwide, but they're based right here in Santa Rosa. Everything from crushers to conveyors and pumps to presses, filters, fillers, and complete packaging solutions, which is the only way we get this show on the air every day with all these things. Their technologies allow you to get your grapes from vineyard to bottle easily. Every time we talk to winemakers and winery owners, they say, oh, yeah, they've helped us out many times. Della Tofola USA. It's online at DellaTofola.us. DellaTofola.us. Okay, so
one final word about Marianne, and it's not people who knew her knew this. She was rarely interested in any kind of publicity.
Yeah.
She had no interest whatsoever in getting credit for anything.
No.
There were times when I tasted wines that she consulted on, and I said, well, that's spectacular wine. And her presentation back to me would always be, well, I think I could have done better. Or I think we could have, there were things we could have.
That's Marianne.
It was so self-effacing, it was ridiculous. And I finally reached that point where I couldn't even credit her in print. You know, I've been writing for the Press Democrat since March of 1979. So 40 years of writing in the Press Democrat and elsewhere. And Marianne's name shows up in my columns maybe 6 times total. And the reason is that she really didn't care for publicity. She was just a dedicated woman who had a real clear idea about what fine wine is all about. And she presented that to the industry almost as a gift. She was really a special person.
And Barbara can attest to that.
I certainly can. As a matter of fact, I think we should toast her.
Okay.
Yeah. Cintani salute.
With her wine. With her wine.
Well, I got the Chardonnay from Stone Street. But all right. So from now on, Dan Berger's going to bring in an old wine from his lay-it-down cellar.
Yeah.
I think that's a brilliant idea.
It was your idea. It should be.
Well, I've been meaning to talk to you about that for years, and I keep spacing on it, and then you brought it up today. So, yeah, I think that's good. It'll be the Dan Lay-It-Down Classic of the Week.
Okay, Classic of the Week. Well, we'll do something with. Maybe we have to have some food with some of the better ones.
What a great idea.
We should bring in some cheeses, and we'll resurrect our cheese segment.
Sure. And we can get some of our restaurant buddies to cater as often as they can, because we're so tied in with the great restaurants.
Why not?
Well, yeah. And essentially with red wines, they're kind of made for that.
Oh, yeah. You need to have a little bit of cheese.
A lot of the white wines that are very, not a real high pH, they're for food, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Even the ones that
What will maybe surprise you most is the old Rieslings that I bring in.
I love Rieslings.
When you try 10-year-old Rieslings, then you'll start to get what I'm getting. Because 10-year-old, that's where Riesling doesn't start its life until 10.
Really?
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
All right. Well, I know you're a Riesling fan, too, big time.
Oh, yeah.
This expands the segment so wonderfully with you bringing in some of these older wines.
And yeah, we got a few hundred of them. So
I'm kind of looking forward to having you open something, then we all go, oh, God, that's disgusting.
It'll happen eventually.
Yeah. It will definitely happen.
Oh, my gosh, the fun you'll have up until
And here then. We are a few minutes before the hour. And there's no browning left in my glass. I'm still drinking this stuff. This old Simi is great.
I was hoping to watch it brown, but it's not really doing
Marianne, her legacy lives. Isn't that great? I love
it. My God, it's still a red wine.
Yeah, it's still red.
So it's still alive.
Well,
there's
a little brick color in there.
But.
But taste-wise, you just took another sip. It's still...
It's delicious.
You don't... Okay. So we don't have to flush this one down the toilet.
I may take it with me to dinner. I'm going to see Ty Beast.
Of course you are.
Yeah, as I always do for the last 2.5 years.
I don't know. Maybe I... You know, I'm the guest. Maybe I should take it home.
Oh, yeah. You can take it home. Here,
and
why don't
I
we do that?
See me for...
Oh, yeah. And now you... And you know it's going to be alive when you get home. So
Barbara, take it home.
Oh, that is... I was kidding, but...
No, seriously.
But
why
I'm
not?
Serious now. Thank you so much.
Barbara Lindblom, longtime winemaker. And what was the gig that you did at Simi, that you said? Some technical...
Oh, Simi. at Simi, we...
technical director or whatever they...
what's it called?
I ran the laboratory.
Basically. The laboratory.
Yeah. And we had this wonderful opportunity to build. Simi was building a whole other section, and... It was remarkable, the stuff that we could get. And
are you, so did you, you obviously, would you go to Davis and learn the science of all this?
That would have been a good idea. I went to Davis and didn't learn the science of this. But, like I said, I just blundered into this at Mondavi. But what I do, I mean, as a kid, I used to make, you know, design buildings and whatnot, so... I was so excited when they said, we're going to build a new wine laboratory, and
gotcha.
We want you to do it. And so I actually did layouts because I knew, you know, how many feet we had. And I drew stuff up, and it was just a riot because when the guys came in and said, okay, so what do you want here? And I handed them that, and they said, okay, we'll do it. It was like, I didn't say, I'd like something here and something there. I mean, I had... You know, all kinds of...
This is really interesting. Winery design is a story we haven't even touched on it in this area.
And we shall.
Someday.
Yeah.
It's a great... It makes such a difference. So something like... Well, the whole winery, basically the upper part of Simi Winery was built new. And my gosh, the brilliant minds putting all of that together was really... Really
and
that,
there, again, is what Andre brought to the table and what Marianne was able to translate from his knowledge. What an incredible combination of talents.
Yes, yeah.
Well, it's an amazing story. I got the one-minute finger from Mike, and it's not the middle one. Sometimes
good.
It is, but not right now. We got 1 minute. Dan Berger, quickly.
Hey, next week.
Next week.
That's another story. What kind of wine would you like next week? It's going to be an old wine. Would you like white or red?
Whatever you think, white, because we did red today.
Well, we'll alternate.
Okay, yeah, okay. That's good.
All right.
So bring something old.
Okay, old white. Sounds good. We'll have it.
You bring the old, I'll bring the new and borrowed blue. No, wait a minute. I'm not a bride. I'm not getting married. Barbara Lindblom, honor to meet you, and you need to come back.
I certainly will.
Okay.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Marianne Graff, what an amazing, iconic winemaker who passed away earlier this year.